What's up? This is.
It still is. Movies on up.
Movies up. Maybe 10 year, I'll get it, and I can get through it. What's up? This is Movies on Up. It's like two lines, and I fuck it up more than anybody should ever.
Yeah, for the past 5 years. Yeah.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. Feel the speed. Feel the rush. I'm Dave, joined by the Jason Statham's character to my Hobbs, Mr. Ryan EB. I'm the speed.
Right.
He's the rush.
That's my best Jason Statham.
We are Movies on Up. Tagline this week, feel the speed, feel the rush. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, and the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are right and we pick you, you will get a prize pack sped into your home.
You'll get the limited edition 5th anniversary prize package.
Yes, yes. Ryan just spoiled it. This is our 5th anniversary show.
I just now spoiled it?
Oh, yeah.
I thought we talked about it last week.
We probably
did. And the week before.
It is. Yeah, we probably did. It is our 5th anniversary show. And
happy anniversary, Dave.
I don't know about you. It does not feel like a fast 5 years.
No, it doesn't.
Actually, it does. Kinda. It doesn't feel like we've been doing it for 5 years. But we have. I mean, it's had moments.
Every time I go to upload a new podcast, I go to the website, moviesonup.com, and I look on the right-hand side where...
It just keeps getting longer.
Yeah. Every month is listed out back from May of 2012. And so I guess at that point, it doesn't necessarily feel like we've done that many episodes because we haven't done them all in one day. But it's one foot in front of the other every week for 5 years. That accumulates. We're accumulators.
Yeah. And I mean, last year we broke down numbers. And I think last year's anniversary episode was like our 276th. So just on lazy math, this should be like our 328th.
Yeah, we
maybe.
Got like 50 like, after
we,
that.
We so. Haven't had any multi-episode weeks, I don't think, since then. It has been 5 years. And last year felt weird. We broke it down. We talked about the history for a little bit. Which
but we can't
weird.
Remember the history.
Yeah.
And we're not going to research it, so that's
no,
hard.
No, and we just did it last year. I don't want to just update it a year. The first year we had clip shows.
That
so
sucked.
For you. I was fine by
yeah, it was awful.
But we haven't changed that much in the past year. Where last year it was cool because like we'd kind of evolved to where we are. And I think now we kind of hit our stride and the minimal
Five
amount
years
of work.
Later.
Yeah. Like we've got it down to a science. So this year we're doing a little something a little different. So we figured for our 5th anniversary show, like we've been doing this 5 years. That's a lot of movies talked about. We get together every few weeks. I mean, every week, wink, wink, to talk about movies. And we have for 5 years, and we haven't grown tired of it. So there's that love of movies that I think we try to make obvious every week. I think it's clear we're not film snobs. Like we're not these elitist.
After you see my list, you're not going to have to wonder if I'm a film snob or
yeah.
not.
Yeah, so we thought, like, what's a good way to celebrate 5 years? So we just decided to, we picked five movies that are basically the reasons we do this. We each have our own different reasons. It's probably the most personal list we've done, other than the one that I put House Party 1 and 2 on. But this is just basically, like, five movies that defined who we are when it comes to movies, that define like our love of movies and what we expect from movies. So I'm excited to hear this. I doubt there'll be crossover. It'd be kind of amazing if there
it's
is.
It's conceivable.
It is. It is. We do have similar tastes. Chronicles my number three, by the way.
I'll switch it out. It was my number one.
But so, I mean, this is probably our most personal just because there's no limit. It's just what five movies have made the biggest impact on your life. Not even favorite movies ever. Like it's not even what's your five favorite movies. It's just what movies impacted you. So we're going to do that. But before we get there, we have a... I haven't done it in so long. We have a bonus to celebrate our 5 years. And this is the worst number fives. This is our fifth year, so our fifth installment. We're going into Movies on Up 5.
So like the worst fifth entry yes. in a franchise.
Yes.
Okay.
Number five. Final Destination 5. It was bad, and when it first was getting produced, they replaced the I with the 5. So instead of...
Five-al.
But in writing, it looked like Anal Destination. And they changed it before.
It might have been better.
Yeah.
Had it been called that.
They changed it before they released it. So that earns them a spot on the list. Number four, Police Academy 5, Assignment, Miami Beach. Reno 911, they are not. By that time, nobody cared about Police Academy. Most of the cast was gone.
Yeah, the cast didn't care.
Yeah. Number three, Rocky 5.
That's the one I was waiting for.
Yeah. Tommy Morrison. Yeah. Tommy the Machine Gun fighting the parking lot. This wanted to do everything that Rocky Balboa did, but it was too impatient
yeah.
to wait for Rocky Balboa. Number two, Friday the 13th, 5, A New Beginning. It's the Halloween 3 of the series, pretty much.
I actually don't hate that one. Last Friday the 13th, I forget when it was. It was a couple months ago. That's the one I watched. That's the one in the nut house, right?
Yeah, where it's not Jason.
Right,
this
yeah.
This is the
no.
one where they tried to transition to turn it into an anthology movie.
There's a couple scenes. The one at the very beginning with this kind of annoying kid with the candy bar when he just gets bludgeoned by the other dude. Love that scene. And that song, like the typical 80s like punker girl is dancing to in a room. I love that song. Big fan of that. That's probably going to be our closeout song for this week because I love that song so much.
But when it comes to 80s horror movies, Anything by Dramarama from Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors is far and away the best.
I'm not saying it's the best, but I really dig that song. There were moments in that movie that I really like. So I want to take a little bit of exception saying that, like, this is the second worst fifth one.
This, how many times is it we have a movie where, like, it's a good idea, but the execution is off? This is the opposite. This is a terrible idea. Like, they're trying to do away with Jason. They're trying to transition to where Friday the 13th is a different killer.
Think that perhaps it's Tommy Jarvis because he gets a little bit nuts at the end of 4?
But the execution? It's not a bad movie.
Right.
As far as Friday the 13th, it's not Manhattan.
No.
So, I mean,
there are things I really like about this movie.
Yeah. It's number two more for the idea of by the fifth installment. Because at this point, you've only had Jason for 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, I was going to say he's only been the killer 3 times.
So to feel like you need to go away from him, and then the way they did it, they didn't even go balls in like Halloween 3 where it's like, there's just no Michael Myers.
Yes.
Like, it's like, he's still there. It's just not Jason. Whatever. Number one, this one's easy. A Good Day to Die Hard. the fifth in the Die Hard series. Not good.
No.
Not good. 4 and 5 are a completely different franchise than 1, 1 and 3.
So, and there was no 2.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's like the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. So
that's a solid list.
That's a solid list.
Jaws made it to 5, didn't it?
Jaws 3D?
3D.
Jaws 4. Was Jaws 4 the revenge?
I think 4 might have been the revenge, but I felt like...
If only there was some way...
Some movie website
that's
that
pulled up on my browser already.
Some internet database of movies that we could check.
Yeah, I'm not showing a Jaws 5. Jaws.
You want to write the screenplay to that?
I would reboot Jaws.
Well, I'm not talking about rebooting it. I just think if we write a screenplay for Jaws 5, let's just pick up where the revenge left off and just do more revenge.
I like that grocery store shark movie. Let's just redo that.
I did see that.
I liked it.
I forget. It was on like the Sci-Fi Channel or something. And I was like, oh, this is the grocery store
shark movie.
Yeah.
That's way better than it has any reason
like
to be.
Sarah's sister was over, I think, of this particular night. And I was like, no, we have to watch this movie. Dave likes it. Turns out, I don't think the girls really understood it. I didn't care so much for it.
Sharks in a grocery store. What's there to understand?
I mean, I was in, but I think they had a tough time with the whole sharks in the grocery store thing. If you can suspend your disbelief,
Well, my number five is actually Sharks in a Grocery Store movie.
Or whatever it was called.
I completely forget what it was called. Let's dig into it. I numbered them just because that's how I do lists.
Right.
But going along here, we're not really... It's not in any particular order. You could number these any way. We're just doing them one at a time. So.
They started to be kind of in chronological order, but I think that got goofed. Maybe it didn't as I look at it. My first two are certainly in chronological order, but that was just an accident. And I think I'm going to have to work hard not to say like my number five is.
Mine actually go backwards chronological.
Weird.
Oddly enough, yeah.
I guess that's just your brain
memories, yeah.
Trying to make some kind of sense out of what made a giant impact. Okay, well, I guess you have to start somewhere and just start thinking about experiences, thinking about movies. And I guess my head went back to my childhood, and that's when I first saw most of these movies, is before I was 10. 60% of my list came that way.
3 out of 5.
Exactly. That's the math that we can do. Don't ask us to add or subtract. But that's how things worked, at least when I put my list together. I'd kind of gone back to my childhood. Those are the movies that probably made the biggest impact on me, because those are the ones that I had seen the most. Those are the ones that I watched the most. And I would argue that the old ones that I have, my first three, I think two of them are absolutely all-time, at least within the hallowed halls of movies on up. I mean, they're like two untouchable movies. They made a large enough impression on me that, you know, 30 years later, I'm getting a red face when talking about spinoffs or reboots. That should tip you off as to what my first movie that I'm going to talk about is. When I was a kid, my dad had, and I think the statute of limitations is up on this, but he had a bunch of VHS tapes where he would tape things off TV, or he'd go rent stuff and hook up two VCRs together and dub. So
that
he
was my brother's method, was the two VCRs.
Well, that would have been my preferred method, but if he could get it on television for free, that's fine too. And most of these movies didn't really matter, but there were some that were certainly dubbed. And he would put them on what I would call like a mixtape. I mean, we used to do it with songs.
Probably about 3 movies usually.
Yeah, yeah, 2 to 3. It depended on the speed at which he recorded them, because there was like the slow play and the extra. I was just barely grasping the technology at that point. But yeah, 2 to 3 movies a piece. And I'm not sure that there was any rhyme or reason as to how he put the movies together. He'd record a movie that he wanted to see on a cassette, and then when he got to another one he wanted to see, or some of them I think he was getting for me, he'd put them together. So you'd end up with a tape that had like Empire Strikes Back followed by The Thing. Those two movies don't go together, but I like both of them. Maybe you'd have another tape that started off with Teen Wolf and would lead into 1984's Ghostbusters, directed by Ivan Reitman, starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Ernie Hudson, the Ghostbusters, and Sigourney Weaver. If you listen to this podcast for a while, I'm sure you've realized how much I love Ghostbusters and some of those other movies that I just talked about. There certainly is an element of nostalgia to those movies, maybe especially with Teen Wolf. It might not be as good as I think it is, or as I insist that it is. But I would watch these movies over and over. And I mean, I can really trace my love of watching movies back to these tapes in specific. I can also trace a lot of my sense of humor back to Dr. Peter Venkman. Ghostbusters was the first Bill Murray movie I had ever seen, and that character, as dry as he was and as young as I was, appealed to me in a way that few characters have since. Not only did I love that character, but I became a pretty big fan of Bill Murray as well. And it's almost 35 years later, I'll still watch just about anything he's in, because his timing, his mannerisms, his facial expression, everything he does on screen just resonates with me. Historical movies can impact how you think of certain events. Biopics can show you a side of a person that you may or may not know had existed. Or an action movie could just simply give you a rush of adrenaline. For me, Ghostbusters shaped so much of what I think is funny, and it basically shaped much of what I would continue to laugh at for the next 35 years. Obviously, when Venkman gets slimed, if you're 6, you like it because it's a sight gag. It's funny. He's got slime all over him. But there are so many lines, and we always pick out the one about the stairs. Where do they go? They go up. It's not a gut-busting line, but it's one that as a kid you don't pick up. I've literally been finding new jokes in Ghostbusters almost every time I watch it. I may have found them all at this point, but it certainly took a long time. And when we talked about the movie from last summer, which had a very similar name, I think I wanted to like it an awful lot because of how much I do have an affinity for the original and how much I actually do like the people that were involved in that movie. And I think that my angst and my anger from last year's Ghostbusters was just because, to me, it didn't live up to the Ghostbusters name. I'm not angry at Ghostbusters 2 for not living up to Ghostbusters, and I guess that's me being a bit of a hypocrite there.
And it's pure sexism.
That too. I am actually a sexist, so that probably has a lot to do with it as well. But Ghostbusters to me is just, when I think of any given comedy, and I do like comedies, there are very few movies that I think are funnier from front to back than Ghostbusters. And I kind of like science fiction-y things. Not that there was a lot of sci-fi to the Ghostbusters, but I mean, they had obviously ghosts, really good humor, some kind of cool action and visual effects for 1984. It blew me away in 84, and it still does to this day.
Yeah, this is one that I easily could have made one of my five because it did have a huge impact on me. I still love it. I just last summer took my kids to see it on the big screen.
And I've been to see it recently at the drive-in. I mean, yeah. They're just, if it comes around,
it's worth, like, I'll still
I've
go
seen
see
it 100
it.
Times, yeah. But yeah, I'll pay to go see it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it easily could have been on mine. If we'd have done six, like, it would have been hard to pick another movie right. other than this. But my number five is a little bit more recent. I'm not playing off the nostalgia. And it's from 2013. It's about time. The reason I picked this movie is because I've been known to say it's a motherfucking masterpiece of a goddamn movie. And it absolutely is. Without this podcast, I don't know that I'd have seen it. I'm not a romantic comedy guy. I haven't seen Love Actually. So written and directed by Richard Curtis doesn't mean anything to me. I've never seen Love Actually. I've never seen The Notebook. Like, movies like that, I rarely see. I do like Domhnall Gleeson, and maybe I would have got back to it at some point.
Bill Nye.
Yeah, I like them, so maybe I would have, but this is the kind of movie that I'd see a trailer for. I would generally just skip over. But back when we did episodes where we had to watch trailers, this was a trailer that we watched, and I pretty much only watched it to discuss it on the show, and the trailer won me over. Like, I absolutely loved the trailer and could not wait for the movie, and I saw it as soon as I could. And I love this movie so much. Like, is it a top 10 movie ever for me? Probably not. It's probably higher than I would think off the top of my head, but it's such a good movie. It's so beautifully done and beautifully acted. And there's a personal, my brother's going to come up a lot in this episode because that's where my love of movies came from. But I've never cried harder at a movie than this one. And it is very emotional. It is very sad, but it was right after Christmas, and I was on the phone with my brother. He was bummed because he realized it was probably his last Christmas. So I had that gut punch of a conversation. And then I sat down to watch this movie, which I thought was a lighthearted romantic comedy. Ooh. There's more to it than that.
The 1-2 right to the scrotum.
So yeah, I absolutely lost it in this movie. But I don't blame it. It was a beautiful moment. Like, it was a beautiful, in a way, maybe helped me come to terms with that conversation, and maybe it gave me an outlet. You know, I didn't want to just break down because of that conversation, because I was the one trying to be strong, and then this movie kind of gave me that outlet, and I'll never see this movie or talk about this movie without thinking of that conversation with my brother, which was one of the most open times he's ever been to me. We weren't really a feelings type of family. Like, I'm not really a feelings type of guy in most cases, so for him to open up like that to me, like, I'll always associate that with this movie. And to think I probably wouldn't have seen this movie, or I wouldn't have seen it right away without this podcast, like, yeah, it warrants a list. Is it the most influential movie in my life? No. But without this podcast, I probably haven't seen this movie that means a lot to me.
It's one of the movies that I love to recommend the most because I don't know anybody that has watched it and not loved it. And people, you know, obviously have different perspectives that they bring into the movie when they see it. Nobody's going to have your particular perspective when they see that movie the way you did. But I try not to tell anybody anything about it.
It's best not to.
Right. I just say it's a romantic comedy, which it is. There's an element of time travel.
It's
which
charming.
It has. Yeah. And I just let them go. And then my
favorite, it really does take you where you don't expect it to.
Absolutely. My favorite is watching them come up to me later. I don't want to actually watch it with you because I don't want to see it again. But I love people that come up to me after. And, you know, responses range from, oh, my God, that was so incredible. Or, you motherfucker, why didn't you tell me? I love that movie affects people so viscerally.
And it's so universal. Like, yeah. There's enough there. Like, it's not your traditional rom-com. I even feel like that's
putting it in a box by saying that, but
which
that's
it's
the
unfair.
Box it belongs in.
Yeah, technically, yes. Yeah, but really it's not fair.
Right.
Because it is more than that.
It has a negative connotation, but it far exceeds the label that you'd put on it. My next movie is a comedy. That is the label you would put on it. It fits very well under that label. My mother is a wonderful woman, and she doesn't have bad taste in movies either. Part of my love for horror movies comes from her, though she tends to like some pretty lame ones in hindsight. I can, however, thank my mom for showing me a couple great movies when I was a kid, one of which is Monster Squad, which does not make the list. But
it
that
surprises
was,
me. I thought it'd make there.
Yeah, it certainly had a place. I guess this one could be interchangeable with Monster Squad, but when I tell you that instead of Monster Squad, I put on Mel Brooks' Spaceballs from 1987, yeah, you kind of get
sense.
It. Yeah, it does. Starring Bill Pullman, John Candy, Rick Moranis. I distinctly remember for weeks there was a movie rental house / pizza parlor, like my two favorite things in the world were in the same building, just about 10 minutes from our house in this little wide spot in the road called Washingtonville. And we would go to this movie store, and for weeks, my mom, knowing that I loved Star Wars, saw this movie, the Spaceballs movie, and would try and get me to watch it because she was like, well, you would probably like this. I'm not sure if she knew it was a comedy. I don't know if she knew anything about it. But I looked at it, and I was like, that is not Luke Skywalker, that's not Chewbacca, and that's not the Millennium Falcon. Get that out of my face, woman. Don't step to me with that garbage. But eventually, I relented, and I was very, very glad I did. As many lines as I can quote from Empire Strikes Back, because it was on one of those mixtapes, I might be able to quote even more lines from Spaceballs. I just watched it about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I ran across some.
Watched it last week.
Yeah, maybe it was just as recently as last week.
It was
week.
On last week. I
yep.
turned it on.
And it was just like, oh, yeah, no, I'm in.
The kids know it. I turn it on pretty much anytime it's on.
Absolutely. For me, it's a remote stopper. Or I'll get up and actually go put the movie on because that's how much I like it. A little bit like Ghostbusters, the sight gags worked on me as a kid. I mean, Pizza the Hut. Oh, I get it, because Pizza Hut.
Comb the desert.
Right, yeah. Comb the desert. Then you got the black dude with the pick. We ain't found shit. I love that. I love the Mr. Coffee, the Mr. Radar. There are just so many ridiculous Mel Brooks jokes.
And John Candy and Joan Rivers, like two of the greatest comic minds ever.
Such a great cast. I mean, and this is real early for me and Bill Pullman. A lot of people have trouble with the Bill Pullman and Bill Paxton. I don't have that issue, probably just because Spaceballs and Lone Star made such an imprint on me. Anytime I see Bill Pullman, no, that's Lone Star. I got that one. That's Lone Star. That's Hudson. I have them separate in my head. I guess I would thank this movie, but I've always been able to appreciate a parody, especially if
back when a parody meant something.
Exactly. And especially if it's a parody of something that I love anyway. There wasn't a kid growing up, probably in our age group, that didn't absolutely love Weird Al, who was basically the musical version of kind of what Mel Brooks was. If you look at stuff like Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, High Anxiety, I mean, these are all parody movies. They're all hilarious. Spaceballs makes my list, quote unquote, just because it's, you know, it's a parody of Star Wars, which is something that I've liked my entire life.
It was the most on-the-nose parody that he did, I think.
I mean, Young Frankenstein is pretty on-the-nose, but for me, it had the biggest impact on me. And I'm not trying to say that film parody started with Mel Brooks. I just mean that he perfected it. Thanks to movies like Spaceballs, you can spoof individual films or even genres now. Without Spaceballs, I don't think we have something like 21 Jump Street, which is a parody of a genre. You also don't have Meet the Spartans or Vampires Suck, but you take the good with the bad.
My next one, a little older than 2013, but still not getting into my childhood just yet. I graduated high school in 1998, not to age myself all that much, but
we can't subtract, so yeah. You're fine.
10 years ago, 1998, I left at a weird spot. I didn't like the dude that I was. Like, I was with a group of friends that we were dicks, and I realized if I'd have went to college in Indiana, I'd have went to college with a group of friends, and I'd have probably just kept being a dick. So I kind of left to try to become like my own person.
A different kind of dick.
Yeah, a different kind of asshole. And I came here in 98. I came here a week after I graduated high school, got a couple jobs. And, you know, I bounced around for a little bit. I didn't have any friends when I came here. It was a random stop that I came. I didn't have anything here. And I bounced around. I ended up my freshman year of college. I hung out with frats, even though I hated it, but it was people to talk to. I got in with a religious group of friends, which I never really fit in because that wasn't me, but they were cool enough dudes. And I bounced around from these groups of friends to groups of friends and people I worked with, but I never really found a home until I met my buddy Nick, and then his friends that he went to school with and their friends, I start talking to them. But when it really clicked was one of them mentioned 2001's Wet Hot American Summer, written and directed by David Wayne, and Showalter helped write it. But that's when it started to kind of click to me. Growing up, through the 90s, the state was on MTV. Me and Zane, who is still to this day my best friend, loved the state. We would get together and watch the state. The state and Mr. Show were our thing. Friday nights, we'd stay the night, one of us at each other's house, just to watch Mr. Show when it started airing on HBO Comedy. Like, he would call me from Kansas at midnight because they were airing Mr. Show reruns at midnight every night. So we would talk on the phone and just watch Mr. Show reruns. So Mr. Show and the state, I'll always credit for where my sense of humor came from. And when I came to Ohio, nobody cared that Mr. Show reruns were there. Like, I didn't have anybody to watch Mr. Show reruns with. Nobody knew who the state was. And then I come across a group of friends with Jason West, who we talk about a lot, and Jeff, and they mentioned Wet Hot American Summer, which at the time I really didn't know that I hadn't heard of it. It's the guys from the state. So once they said, like, oh, it's the guys from the state, that was like our bonding moment. I felt at home, and Jeff had all the state on VHS that we would borrow, and me and Jason ended up living together, and we would just watch the state on VHS because it hadn't been released anywhere. So we'd watch the state, and we'd watch Wet Hot American Summer, and like, this was like my welcoming card. And I had already been in Ohio 4 or 5 years before I really got intermingled with this group, but that was 15 years ago, and that's still my group of friends. Jason West, I still see and talk to regularly. Like, I'm still part of that circle of friends, and I wouldn't have really latched on had we not found this bond between the state and the people from it in this movie, Wet Hot American Summer. So I credit this to like giving me that window to be like, hey, these are the friends I want to have the rest of my life.
There are certain, I guess, touchstones that if you feel the same way I feel about a movie, chances are we're going to get along. And I don't want to say it's like the more obscure, the better idea it's going to give you as to whether or not we're going to jive. It's like, do you like Star Wars? You say yes. Well, all right. Yeah. I feel like there's a pretty large subset of people that like Star Wars. But something like Wet Hot, that's a very specific kind of comedy. If you think it's funny, then we're going to get along fine.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, that's where my sense of humor came from. So, like, I knew that I was with people that I could be myself. I wasn't partying with frat dudes. I wasn't with these super religious people. Like, this was the first time I felt like, oh, I can be me. And that's where I am now still.
Still being you. My next movie is also a movie I've already mentioned. It comes from my father's tapes. It is John Carpenter's The Thing from 1982, starring Kurt Russell, Keith David, Wilford Brimley. This is one that Dave and I think sneak on just about any list applicable, because that's how much I think we both enjoy the movie. This is actually the last movie that made this particular list. Like I said, the movies aren't in any particular order, so it's not like I don't like this as much as I like Spaceballs, because truth be told, I probably do like it more.
I think The Thing is probably a top 10 movie for each of us.
I would think so. When I looked at this list, there was a glaring omission, and I don't just mean because The Thing wasn't on it, but the horror genre wasn't present. I had a couple comedies, I had a couple crimey kind of movies, but no horror. I mean, we both love horror movies. All you got to do is go back to any of the four previous Octobers and listen to us.
Yeah, we did two episodes each October, so we'd be at like 332.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure if we were still doing that or not. October was a long time ago. We devote an entire month to horror movies specifically because it is a genre that means so much to us. this movie, I can't really explain why I was allowed to watch this movie as a child, but I remember being fascinated by the idea that the monster could be anyone. It was not the first horror movie I'd seen, but when you watch something like Alien, you know that is the monster. Like, that's the bad thing. You know when it's sneaking up behind somebody. You know, if you're watching Friday the 13th, Jason or whoever is pretending to be Jason, when you see that hockey mask, you know that some character is in danger. But with The Thing, by the time you find out who The Thing has taken possession of, you're in for some real shit. I love practical effects in movies. I didn't realize that at the time. I didn't realize it till much, much later.
Well, that was what we had then.
Exactly, because that's all there was.
Clash of the Titans.
Right, yeah. It was stop motion. It was claymation. It was whatever. But later in my life, when CG started to be more of a mainstay, because it's cheaper and you can do fancier things easier, I grew a new appreciation for this movie and for, you know, what Tom Savini was doing. And a lot of these guys, Nicotero, maybe a little bit later, but what these guys were doing in front of the camera, it still blows me away. And the practical effects in this movie, I think, hold up and look much better than the CG that they used for
big time
the prequel of The Thing, which you want to talk about me getting pissed off about Ghostbusters, how you would make a Thing prequel and not use practical effects. That completely baffles me. John Carpenter, as a filmmaker, could probably have a couple more entries on this list. I think it's generally accepted that Halloween is a perfect slasher movie and kind of a genre-defining movie. And I think it's because John Carpenter knows how to make a perfect horror movie. And I think he did it here as well. You combine what he does so well from a storytelling standpoint with Ennio Morricone's score and Carpenter helping out there, they're able to perfectly mirror, from a music standpoint, the isolation that you see on the screen. I don't necessarily think that I measure every horror movie I see against The Thing, because that would be unfair to just about everything else. But it's one that I always go back to. The first, I don't know, dozen times I watched the movie, I was genuinely terrified. And it's not just because of the head spider or the chest that eats the guy's arms, but the tension that Carpenter builds is right up there with anything Hitchcock ever did.
The scene where they're tied
to
the chair.
That's right where I'm going. Yeah.
That is one of the greatest movie scenes of all time. Genre be damned. Like, that is one of the most beautifully written, directed, acted, shot, framed, scored anything. That is one of the most amazing scenes in cinematic history.
That is the scene you would pick out if you're talking about how the tension builds in that movie. But that's sort of like, I almost feel like that's a mini movie within the movie.
That's the demo reel where Saw sent the Shawnee Smith with the thing. Like, they filmed that and that was their how to sell the movie. That part of The Thing is the entire movie in this little capsule.
Yeah, it is. And then it basically just resets from there, where you're back to square one with this tension that builds again and again. We're going to talk about Ridley Scott movies. Is it next week
or the week after?
Yeah. And Alien's going to come up again. And it's impossible to talk about Alien and not mention John Carpenter, because he was a giant influence on that movie. And I love them both. This has like all the isolation you would have with something like Alien, which was essentially Jaws in space. So this is Jaws in Antarctica. But when you combine the idea that this creature could basically spread over the entire planet, it's already on Earth. So, I mean, Alien and a movie like Life that just came out a couple months ago, like, the whole point of Life is to keep this thing from getting to Earth. Do whatever you can so that it doesn't get to Earth. But in The Thing, it's already there. So these scientists in Antarctica are just tasked with, well, we can't let this thing escape because it will take over the entire world. The stakes are just so much higher than they are in something like even Alien.
Deep Blue Sea.
Apparently, the stakes were much higher in Deep Blue Sea. They had a sequel in mind.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yeah, that had even more, like, genetically enhanced
maybe
sharks.
Maybe we'll find a way shark to talk about that later. Sharks with machine guns built in.
Yeah, which ranks just behind head spiders in terms of shit that will scare me.
We could say the same thing about Time. It's almost unfair to call this a horror movie. It is a perfect horror movie, but that gives it a stigma and a connotation where it's so much more than that. You can hate horror movies and love The Thing for how beautiful of a movie it is.
Beautifully gross.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's a well-crafted movie. Horror or not, like, it's just such a perfectly done movie. Which leads into my next one. Now we're getting back to the childhood. My brother loved action movies. Like, fighting movies. American Ninja 1 through... I could probably could have put American Ninja 5 on there. I'm sure there were at least five of them. But the American Ninja movies, the Delta...
Which was the series that had Cousin Cody from Step by Step, the Code Man.
I don't know who that is. I never watched Step by Step. But Michael Dudikoff was American Ninja.
I'll figure
it
out.
The Chuck Norris, there were the two. There was Delta Force and Missing in Action. Rambo. He liked those movies. And I would watch them with him just because I would watch anything with my brother because he was my gateway to movies. So if I wanted to watch a movie, it had to be with my brother. I didn't really like action movies. They didn't give me anything. Until a little film directed by John McTiernan came out called Die Hard. And this proved to me that, like The Thing, you know, it's hard to classify as just a horror. About Time, it's hard to put as just a rom-com because there's so much more to it. Die Hard's the same way. Yes, it's 100% an action movie, but there's more to it. There's a great character. You know, there are great characters. There's a great villain. There's a story. There's a plot. There's twists. There's turns. Like, it had everything I want in a movie wrapped in this action movie package. And I think this was the first movie that kind of made me damn expectation and opened my eyes to, like, that's not just a comedy. That's not just a rom-com. That's not just a horror movie. Like, this is so much more than an action movie to me.
Because people, like, nowadays, it's Die Hard on a plane. It's Die Hard here. They're not saying it's an action movie. They're saying it's Die Hard, which is like a subset of the best possible action movie.
Yeah, Die Hard in the White House. Yes. So like this is what opened my eyes to think like you don't have to be tied down to your surroundings. You know, if you want to make an action movie, you don't have to have blank wooden characters and just a stupid point A to point B plot. You don't have to follow any rules. Maybe from the creative mind of me to where like I still enjoy writing and I write nonstop. Maybe this opened my eyes more to that part of me, to the creative part of me, where I don't have to be shackled by genre or rules, but it made me expect more from movies. So, and there's nothing wrong. If you like just a dumb throwaway comedy or a dumb action movie, you're not wrong. That's not for me. They have their place. I'll throw them on in the background. But for a movie for me to care about, like, I want more out of it. And Die Hard gave me all of that while still satisfying my action movie fan brother who just liked the punch-punch-kick stuff. That's all he cared about. He didn't care about any of the stuff. To the day he died, he didn't care about cinematography or dialogue or anything. He just, is it cool looking? That's all my brother ever cared about. Was it cool and was it adrenaline pumping? And like, this gave all that. So this was like a perfect blend of like what my brother looks for in a movie and what I look for in a movie. And it just opened my eyes to what movies could be. That they can be everything these two people with different tastes want to be and combine them. And that's why I have trouble with these dumb... I've never seen a Fast Five movie. I've never seen a Fast and the Furious movie. That's just not my genre. I don't like the big, ridiculous, over-the-top action. I wanted more from movies. And this gave us both. And this is the first movie I can think of to where it did all that. Even to this day, I'm not just like a dumb action movie guy. Like, I haven't seen the Fast and the Furious, which I'm sure they're good for what they are, but that just over-the-top... extreme action just doesn't do anything for me, whereas Die Hard did.
Because you kind of live it, you know?
Yeah, I'm extreme to the bone. Die Hard just gave me everything I wanted and gave my brother everything I wanted. So, like, these two people with completely different tastes in movies could enjoy the one together. And this is one of the first movies I can think of that brought us both together.
If your brother enjoyed Jean-Claude Van Damme's Kickboxer.
He did.
I'm sure, because I think your brother and I would have been able to watch the movie.
I'd see it like three times in theaters.
Because I was into that shit. Kickboxer 2 did not star Jean-Claude Van Damme. It starred Sasha Mitchell, who was perhaps better known as the Code Man from Step by Step, the ABC show.
Okay.
That was it. Not American Ninja.
Michael Dudikoff.
Yes, it was.
There had to be at least five of those.
Kickboxer 2, 3, and 4, I believe he was in. I believe there was a Kickboxer 5, but at that point, the Code Man had moved on. I've never seen it.
American Ninja got up to 5.
All with the dude?
Dudikoff was 1, 2, and 4. David Bradley was 3 and 5.
My next movie is a Quentin Tarantino movie. It's Reservoir Dogs from 1992, starring Harvey Keitel, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen. This may not have been the droid that you're looking for. I've spent a lot of time recently espousing my love for Tarantino's follow-up to Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction was my first experience with QT, and I've said that it has changed the way I watch a movie, and certainly it did. Perhaps the greatest thing Pulp Fiction did for me was get me to watch Reservoir Dogs, make me a fan of Quentin Tarantino, certainly early Tarantino. The nonlinear storytelling, the snappy dialogue, the great soundtrack that I love so much about Pulp Fiction, it's all on display here too, 2 years earlier, as well as many of the same the principal actors. For me, Pulp Fiction is like the first serious girlfriend you had. You know, at the time, she's amazing, and no one else could possibly hope to be quite as wonderful. And then you meet Reservoir Dogs a couple years later. She doesn't dress as flashy, or maybe isn't the captain of the cheerleading squad, but she's actually a better match, and when you get right down to it, you're more compatible. And that's kind of how I feel about Reservoir Dogs. It's a simpler movie. The storytelling's it's a lot tighter. It's not as flashy, but I think it's a better movie than Pulp Fiction. I do. It didn't start the fire for me the same way Pulp Fiction did, but I've talked a lot about that, so screw that. We'll just take another movie. Towards the beginning of each of the movies, there's a scene of dialogue that seems completely inane and doesn't advance the plot. There's the diner scene in Reservoir Dogs where they're talking about tipping, and then there's the scene with Vincent and Jules in the car where they're talking about the Royale with cheese. As far as I can ever remember in movies, if there was dialogue, usually it was to advance the plot. Like, there was some reason that these characters were interacting with each other, other than they're just in a car together, so of course you're going to be talking. And maybe that's just the movies that I was watching at the time. There wasn't a lot of maybe character development. It was just like, hey, I have to tell you this thing so that together we can go accomplish this particular goal and get to the credits. But these scenes kind of gave me a different appreciation for developing characters. Like I said, the scenes don't advance the plot, but they're integral to learn what type of folks you're going to be dealing with for the next couple hours. The characters seem to be having this inane discussion, but it makes them real. You know, we're not always talking about earth-shattering things. And
we've done it for 5 years.
Exactly. Talking about having inane conversations. I don't think you would really necessarily, especially now, mistake Tarantino characters for being grounded in reality. But at least some of the characters in early Tarantino movies were grounded because they would have these conversations that made them seem like normal people, not like characters in a movie. And when he's on, when he's not trying to out Quentin Tarantino himself, I think that there's very few that are better at him than creating these relatable characters, even if they're doing things that aren't relatable to most people. I think, you know, he gives you a look behind the curtain at who these characters are when they're not doing what they're going to be doing for the rest of the movie. And even that look behind the curtain, how the sausage is made, what should be just a boring conversation, he finds a way to make pretty damn entertaining.
Yeah, I thought Pulp Fiction would be yours.
Yeah, I started typing Pulp Fiction, and I was like, no, can't do it.
My next one is a movie that I don't even particularly like.
It's Chronicle. I knew it.
I mentioned my brother a lot, because that's where my love of movies come from. Like, I've mentioned that before. He liked the Kick, Kick, Punch, Punch movies. He loved Bruce Lee movies. especially 1973's Enter the Dragon. I've mentioned my Aunt Laura before. She passed away 3 days before my brother. So, like, the two of them, my parents would send us to my grandma and grandpa's where my Aunt Laura lived. Every summer, we'd have to go for at least a week or two just to get us away from them and give them some time. And, you know, there was a movie theater about a half hour away. At least once or twice in that time, my Aunt Laura would take me and Gary to movies. Usually two to three. So, I mean, I saw a lot of movies that way. But then every time, the first day we would go, she would take us to the town about 15 miles away to the little video store and tell us you can each rent two movies. And we would go and we'd walk through. Every time my brother would rent Enter the Dragon and one other movie. And we'd sit there and I would just watch him watch this and love it. No matter how many times we watched it, he had this joy and this fascination every time he watched it. And then I realized, and that's where that love of movies came from, is that this thing that he's seen, he can say every word to.
In fairness, there were only 9 words in Enter the Dragon.
But he still is blown away by it every time he watches it. And you know what? He never got tired of watching it. I never got tired of watching him watch it, just because of how much he enjoyed it. Yeah, I don't like the movie, but I'll forever remember this movie as being proof to me that you can watch these over and over and over and over again. You know, you mentioned Ghostbusters, how we still see it now to this day because we still want to watch it from beginning to end because it's a total movie to us. So seeing him love this movie so much that every time we went, he could rent two movies. One of them was always this because he knew if the second one he got something he hadn't seen and he didn't like it.
At least the first one was Enter the Dragon.
Yes. At least if he doesn't like the second movie, we can watch this over and over every day if we have to. Which leads me to my other one. We're gonna mix it up a little bit because usually I would go back to Ryan, but this is where I found my Enter the Dragon. I was 6 when Gremlins came out in 1984, and I watched it, and I thought, I want to watch this movie every day for the rest of my life. And that became my Enter the Dragon. You know, we would go and we could rent two movies. He would rent Enter the Dragon and another movie. I would rent Gremlins and another movie. And my aunt got so tired of seeing Enter the Dragon and Gremlins because we watched them so much that eventually the next time we visited, okay, you guys can each pick 3 movies. So it was Enter the Dragon, Gremlins, and 2 other movies each. Because we knew if we didn't like our other choices, we can watch Gremlins over and over and over again. We can watch Enter the Dragon over and over and over again. Because of that, I have so many memories of Gremlins. Watching it with my brother at my grandma and grandpa's. Watching it by myself many, many times. I've watched it with my kids who love it, which gave me a great memory. When I lived by myself, or even before I had a family and I didn't want to impose on friends on holidays, like my Christmases, I would sit at home by myself and put Gremlins on. So I have those memories. Like me and Westy would watch Gremlins when we had the apartment together. Like I have so many memories of this movie with so many different people. From a sentimental standpoint, like I think Gremlins is probably the most important movie to my life. I mean, it's comedy, it's horror, it's funny, it's scary, it's great in every way imaginable. And to be introduced to it at such a young age, yes, it helped develop my love of movies. Yes, it gave me this joy of just watching the same thing over and over again. And it's a top 5 movie ever for me. Like, to this day, in the almost 40 years since this movie came out, 30 years this movie came out, like, I probably couldn't name 5 movies that I like more than Gremlins. And that's just from a movie standpoint. Then you add the sentimental part, and, like, nothing tops this to me. Like, from the memories involving this movie, I've probably seen this movie more than any movie in history, as far as, like, from beginning to end viewings. And I still watch it regularly. Like, I still watch it probably every month or two just because I love it. Like, if I'm bored and there's nothing going on, like, Gremlins is my go-to. And that'll never change because it'll never get old to me. And it's the same kind of thing. When you get to people our age, I feel like there's two different... 84 is a huge year. I think you have your Gremlins and your Ghostbusters people. And I think there's a lot you can tell about. Like,
but you're kind of both.
Yeah, but I would lean more towards... And I, sure. I mean, there's a crossover there, but I
and
think...
And I lean more towards Ghostbusters, but I don't think it's like...
It's not a complete divide, but I think there's...
Like, are you an Elvis guy or are you a Beatles guy?
Yeah, kind of. And I mean, you can like both, but like, where do you... Basically, if you pick either one, we could be friends
right.
because we're so close. But I feel like these movies meant different things. But it's always going to be Gremlins to me. And to go back to what your dad used to make the mixtapes, my brother did the same thing. And he would put them together. Like he would...
Like a double feature.
Yeah, he would rent movies and he'd figure... He would do runtime and think like, okay, this is an 8-hour tape. I can fit these four movies here. I can put them in this order. And like they were perfect. He made mixtapes of movies. And I remember he blew my mind the one time because we were getting ready to go to my grandma and grandpa's and he pulls out a movie and it was Enter the Dragon followed by Gremlins. And he said, this time we can pick three movies each. And it blew my mind because we didn't tell my Aunt Laura. So like we go and she was
overjoyed,
ecstatic that we each picked three different movies. And then the next day she comes home from work and we're watching Gremlins. We're watching Enter the Dragon. And like she realized like she couldn't win. She could never get away from those movies. So, I mean, that's like I said, I don't really like Enter the Dragon. But to see the joy it brought to my brother showed me how the impact these movies could make. And then I had my Gremlins, which gives me that same joy still. So it's hard not to group them together. Even though I don't like it, I can't.
Your brother grouped them together, so that's...
He did. I wish I still had that tape, but...
I know. These mixtape things, like...
I used to have a ton of them.
Yeah.
Because he made me one that was like... I forget the third movie. It was Strange Days, Demon Night, and there was a third one. He'd buy me these VHS too, though. So it wasn't like... He would tape movies that we owned.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't all, like, illegal stuff.
Right.
Like, he would buy me Strange Days and Demon Night for Christmas and then put them on one tape so that I could just put it in the VCR in my room and just hang out all day without having to swap movies. So,
and certainly most of these, like, I've purchased, you know, all these movies that I've talked about, all these movies on the mixtapes.
Oh, we've put money into them somehow.
Yeah, but I mean, something about taping the world television premiere of Ghostbusters and then seeing the commercials and getting a promo for Sally Jesse Raphael stuck in the middle of the second act. Like, I wish I still had those for that reason. And I know at some point my dad was like, I'm getting rid of this shit.
It gives you that Grindhouse feel. Like,
it does.
Like what Grindhouse was supposed to. It's a different feeling, but like, I would love to just sit and watch it. And my brother, he never liked to tape them off of TV.
Yeah.
He didn't like the commercial interruptions,
right.
But.
And I see where he's coming from, because at the time, I didn't like it either, because I would fast forward through the commercials.
He would rent movies and just record them. Like.
Now out of nostalgia, I want it back. My last movie is the newest movie that is on my list. It is from 2000. I am certainly not the guy on this podcast that loves crime movies, and I'm certainly not the guy on the podcast that loves all things English. But when I saw Guy Ritchie's Snatch... Which, let that marinate for a while. Starring the aforementioned Jason Statham, Benicio Del Toro, and Brad Pitt. I was absolutely blown away. I do not ever remember evangelizing a movie quite as much, although About Time probably comes close. But, and I don't know what possessed me to rent Snatch from the video store, but I grew up in a very rural area, and sometimes it took quite a bit for something to penetrate that cultural bubble. I still have the same friends as I did in high school, but they were not the dudes that were going to like show me a sweet movie. They were the guys that would like, oh, hey, check out this band, stuff like that. And a large portion of the music that I appreciate is because of those guys, but certainly not the movies. Seeing this movie was right in kind of that wheelhouse where I had this exuberance towards anything that looked like or smelled like it might be a Tarantino movie. And I found my way to Guy Ritchie, and he seemed to have the voice of Tarantino, but with these larger than life, almost pulpy characters, like comic booky Quentin Tarantino characters, which now, I mean, he does that himself. The pace of Snatch just blew me away. That thing went like 1,000 miles an hour right from the start, much in the way that Pulp Fiction brought me to Reservoir Dogs, that was a movie 2 years earlier. Snatch brought me to 1998's Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And I never ended up loving Guy Ritchie movies the same way that I love Tarantino's. Part of that, I think, is due to...
to Guy Ritchie.
Well, it's a Guy Ritchie, and he's kind of genre-hopped a little bit. Tarantino, I mean, makes, okay, this is my revenge movie, this is my Western. Guy Ritchie movies nowadays still feel like Guy Ritchie movies.
They're just not movies I'm... like, right. The Sherlock movies aren't bad movies.
No, and I've seen them both, and I like
King Arthur, I'm sure will be watchable, but I don't care.
To me, where Guy Ritchie does the best is when he's in the slums, in the sewers, the underground of these English crime movies, for lack of a better word. And he's brilliant, and he's really funny. I think of Del Toro's Frankie Four Fingers, or more specifically, what happens to Frankie. And it makes me gut laugh every time I see him get hit by that car. When we watched this at my buddy's house, this was one of during the evangelizing, I brought it over there and we watched it and just kept rewinding. It's among the best guy gets hit by a car scenes in movies. It might be number two, but it's up there. And I'm not sure what makes a movie cool, but I think whatever it is, Snatch had it. That might be...
it defined it.
I think so. I mean, Brad Pitt's character, so cool.
Amazing.
This is before Jason Statham was Jason Statham. Just the attitude of that movie. And I think this was the first time I remember thinking that I discovered something. Nobody I knew. And, you know, at this point in 2000, we had maybe dial-up internet if we had that. So I wasn't reading Entertainment Weekly. I wasn't looking at movie blogs. We didn't have an independent theater anywhere near us. So the only ways that you would really be able to discover stuff is by doing deep dives at the video store. And I did that with Snatch, and I was like, holy shit. Specifically, even foreign movies I didn't really watch. I mean, these guys more or less spoke English. But I wasn't watching Italian movies. I wasn't watching Australian movies. I wasn't watching Japanese movies. But all that changed after Snatch. Like, it's, you know, when Steven Spielberg comes out with a movie, because you're plastered with that all over the TV. You have to work harder to find movies, especially 17 years ago. You got to work harder to find movies that were produced either independently or outside of the country. And this was the first one where I remember, like, I am so glad I found this movie.
See, I had seen Lock, Stock, and I loved it. So I was waiting. I eagerly awaited Snatch to come out because I loved Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels so much. And then this came out and topped it. I think they're both great movies, but I think Snatch is, when it comes to crime movies, like, I put Heat on a pedestal as, like, a perfect movie.
Right.
I don't think I give Snatch enough credit. Like, it's a different kind of crime movie.
Absolutely.
But it's pretty much just as perfect. Your characters are, they're cartoon characters. They're comic
book
characters.
They're like Dick Tracy characters,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah, and there's so much that it feels like, and it's ironic because they just turn it into one, but it feels like a TV series. It feels like 10 episodes put into a movie. It really does, because there's so much that happens. There's so many characters. None of them are really, like, brushed off, like Dennis Farina, the Harry, like, there's, everybody has their moments, and you get to know all of these characters because it's paced so well, because it moves so fast. You can fit a lot in there, and I absolutely love this movie. And if we'd had to go 7, 8, this probably wouldn't be far behind, because it is, I mean, I love crime movies, and this is one of my favorite crime movies. It's one of the best and one of my favorites of my favorite genre. I love this movie, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because I love talking about it. But before we get to anything else, we have another bonus list. This one, the best number fives, the best fifth installments, starting with the number five, Fast Five. Never seen it. I'll take their word for it.
That's when The Rock showed up,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's when The Rock.
Yeah, then it deserves a place on
the
list.
When The Rock showed up and saved it. Number four, The Deadpool, the fifth Harry, Dirty Harry book movie.
Mm-hmm.
I like this one. I like this Dirty Harry movie.
It gave us Deadpool.
Yeah.
It did. That's where it got the name from.
Number three, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Solid movie. Number two, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. This is the weakest one from three on, but still pretty good. With Harry Potter movies, I don't like one and two.
That's what I was putting that together. I was like, yeah. Right, so
one and two are kids'
two
movies.
Really good or are they really bad?
One and two are kids' movies. Three through the rest, awesome. This is the weakest of those, but when it comes to movies with five installments, number one.
I suspect I know it.
Bit of a cheat, Attack of the Clones. No, it is The Empire Strikes Back. It's the second installment, but it's the fifth installment.
Episode five.
So, yeah, so I cheated. Second movie, but the fifth one. So,
thank you for doing that. You had instructed me to leave Star Wars off my list.
We did say leave Star Wars off.
Which obviously would have, as I sit here in my Star Wars hoodie, on May the 4th. Spoiler alert.
2016.
Yeah, we record these ahead of time. 2016. Many of the memories that you have of Gremlins, I have of Star Wars, and whether it's seeing episode one on opening day with a ton of my friends or running off the bus to get home in time to see TRL, knowing that the Duel of the Fates video was going to be on there, reading all the stuff about this new trilogy that was going to happen once Disney bought the company, or if it was going to, you know, a Star Wars convention just to see and talk to other people that were just as nerdy about the same stuff. Obviously, that franchise, everything that Gremlins kind of represents to you, these now, if we're talking about saga movies, these seven movies, soon to be eight, certainly represent that to me.
Yeah, and a lot of what I said about Gremlins, I could say about Star Wars. The only reason I said we obviously love Star Wars, and I didn't want it to just turn into...
Here's my five movies.
Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars Force Awakens, Ghostbusters reboot. But these were my brother's favorite movies. Like, my brother loved these movies. I loved these movies. My mom, who didn't really...
I should have started this podcast with your brother.
He could have. My mom didn't really get into movies with us. Like, she would take us sometimes, but for the most part, we were on our own. She loved Star Wars. My whole family, my family loved Star Wars. So I have a lot of great memories. I've watched them with my kids. Like, this is another one of those that, like, you know, I took my daughters to see Force Awakens. You know, I'll take the older three to see Last Jedi. Like, and I mean, we spent a year where we did
every month,
all six of them, done an episode on all seven of them. So, like, we've talked about it and we know how important Star Wars is to us. And I wanted to touch on it, but I didn't want to dedicate the whole episode to
Fair
it.
Fair enough.
Were there any that you just, even in hindsight, you maybe would have mentioned? Or
yeah. People ask me all the time, like, what's your favorite movie? And I just laugh at them.
It's hard. Like, yeah. I mean, I have an answer. Like, I could name my top three easily.
I don't.
I do, but
it
but
depends
none
on,
of them were mentioned today.
It depends on when you ask me. Four of these movies, like I said, Everything But the Thing came to me so easily. But then trying to come up with that horror movie was tough because I wanted to put They Live on there because I love that movie. Again, John Carpenter. So, I mean, it would fit my I need a John Carpenter horror movie to put on here. But I'm just afraid that, like, there's sort of like this dam that I've built for these five movies. And then if you start talking about other stuff, we'd just be here forever.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Shaun of the Dead would probably be one of the closest ones on there that we haven't mentioned. That was one that me and Westy had seen a trailer for. Didn't get a theatrical release around here. The day it came out on DVD, I had to go to like three different stores until I found it, and I wanted it to have by the time Jason got home from work. So I searched for it, and we watched it together and loved it. And it was just kind of our thing because it wasn't, nobody had known it at that time. Like, Edgar Wright wasn't anybody at that time. So, like, that one was cool because it was kind of our thing. And I still love it. I think it's a perfect horror comedy. But yeah, I mean, there's movies I love. Like, I think my favorite movie ever is probably 28 Days Later, but it doesn't have that emotional impact that the ones I
it's
mentioned
just,
have.
You know, a movie
it's just
that,
that
you
I,
love,
I
yeah.
love it. Like, it's everything I want in a movie. It just doesn't have emotional relevance. Like, Children of Men, Sunshine are right behind it. Same thing. They're just, I love them as movies, but I don't have that emotional connection to them. So,
It's hard. Like, for me, it almost had to be movies from my childhood because that's the last time I felt emotion.
Yeah. But as far as the podcast, like,
It's been fun.
Like, it's weird that it's 5 years and, like, we still have energy. Like, I'm still excited to talk movies with you. I'm still excited to do some of these lists. And we're still coming up with stupid lists that we haven't done somehow. Or maybe we've did them and just forgot female action movies. And we're going to try to do newer type of episodes instead of just, here's a list, here's an actor movie or list, here's a movie. We're going to try to mix it up just to keep it interesting, but we've got such a formula now, and we bring the energy, I think. And I after 5 years and, you know, 5 years of weekly episodes, that's a lot of episodes of a movie podcast. And we're still talking about movies that we haven't talked about yet. That's why at first when we started doing it, I wanted news to be a part of it because I thought I want to keep doing this. And maybe the only way to keep it fresh is to keep up with the news. But we don't. Like, we haven't done news in years. And I still think it feels fresh because we're still finding ways to talk about movies we've never talked about before. And not even just ones that have come out in the last 5 years. Like, we still haven't done an Ice Pirates episode. Like, I still try to mention that as much as I can.
We've,
like,
not done a Time Bandits episode.
Yeah, no. And I mean, that's one thing I wanted to do. Like, in my top five, we've done a Die Hard and a Gremlins episode. We haven't done Wet Hot American Summer or About Time. Like, yours, we've done The Thing.
Did we?
Yeah. We've done The Thing. We haven't done Reservoir Dogs.
Snatch.
We haven't done Snatch.
Ghostbusters.
We've done Ghostbusters.
And Spaceballs.
And Spaceballs, we haven't. So, like, these are movies we love, and we're 5 years in that, you know, if we get bored, hey, let's do a Spaceballs episode. Absolutely. Like,
we do that when the Star Wars comes out.
Yeah. So, like, there's still movies that we could talk about. Like, there's still actors that it's like, oh, we haven't done an episode of them. We did a composer episode, which was different. We're doing a studio episode in a few weeks. Like, there's still plenty to get excited about. And I enjoy that I love movies because of these five movies and countless others. And it's been a fun 5 years. If you've been in with us from the whole beginning and you still are, thank you. If you've just jumped in at some point,
Jason.
Anybody who's listened to any episode, thank you. And, you know, I don't know that we'll do it for another 5 years, but I don't see the end right now.
Oh, I do.
Next week.
You got it.
But yeah, so that was our 5-year anniversary show. Thanks. I was just a dude with two kids at the time.
Oh,
now
God.
I have a kid for each year. So we've gone through changes, but I'm happy with where we are. I like it. We wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't fun for us.
That's
still
true. We're not getting rich off this.
Yeah, not getting rich by any means. So, I mean, there's still that. Our joy of movies is literally the only thing that keeps this going. And I don't see that fading away anytime soon. So, till next week when we talk about whatever nonsense we're going to talk about.
On to year five now. Episode 501.
Yep, our fifth season. So, until then,
keep it up.